Could you go back and tell us about your father's graduating from Penn and then your sister?
Yeah, well, my father was a 1910 graduate of the Millinery College at Penn. And my sister was a student at New Jersey College for Women, which was part of Rutgers. She went there for 1 year and she decided she wanted to be a veterinarian. So my father took her to the University of Pennsylvania, who knew the dean very well. They discussed it, and the dean told them there were no facilities for women, no bathrooms or dressing facilities. And he suggested that he call Cornell, and if he knew anyone there. Well, my father did know a few people. And
How would your dad have known people at Cornell?
Well, you have to understand, Samuel Goldberg, who was my father-in-law, had taught at Cornell, and through him, he knew a large number of people there. And as a matter of fact, my father and Dr. Goldberg met at a veterinary convention in New Jersey in 1934. And my father said, how many children do you have? And he said he had a daughter going to Cornell. And my father said, I have a son at Cornell. So he invited the family down to our town, Byron. And they came down and I met his daughter. I was intrigued with her. She was gorgeous. Anyway.
And you were handsome.
I said to her, well, when you get to Ithaca, I'll pick you up at the train. And everything was by train. There was no other way to get to. I'll take you to your dormitory and show you how it works. Well, she had been born in Ithaca, but she didn't know too much about the college. She left there at a young age, maybe 5. So I picked her up and took her to Sage, the dormitory right across from the veterinary college. I got her settled, and every day I'd come over, find out how she was doing. I took her to the register and so forth. Finally, they had a dance for freshmen, and I said to her, I know just the guy. I'll get you a fellow to take you to the dance. She said, how about you? I couldn't back out. I said, okay, I'll take you. And I took her, and from that time on, I used to see her every day. And about a year later, we got married.
When was that? What year was that?
We got married on the day I graduated, in 1935.
Really? Yeah. Let's go back to your sister.
All right. My sister's case, she was admitted to Cornell. And she was the only woman in her class. And there had been women before her, 4 or 5, but she was an exception. She was in the class of 33. And I think Philip Hine was in that class, either that or the one before. And she was a fairly good student. And then when it came time to apply to college for me, I applied to both Penn and Cornell. And I was admitted to both. And my father, you know, in those days, your father made the decision, not you. He said, if I'm going to have 2 in college, they're going to be in the same place, so I can make one trip to see them both. And that's how I ended up at Cornell. I really wanted to go to Penn, but I didn't. So all my friends went to Penn.
So you came up by train with your sister?
Yes. All the transportation was, unless you had a car, which very few people had in the middle 30s, you came by train from the Reading Terminal downtown.
Now tell us about how your sister met Vernikoff.
Well, he was 2 years ahead of her at the vet school. And they started to go out together. And I think they got married in February of the year she graduated.
33.
They got married in February or March before they graduated. He opened a practice in Forest Hills. And he had a good small animal practice.
Forest Hills, New Jersey?
New York.
Forest Hills, New York.
Yeah, and Long Island. And he was a very good practitioner without a small animal. They stayed there until 1939, when we got so busy, we just couldn't handle it. So he came and my sister came, and they all moved to Byron. That's how we operated the business. He was in the production standpoint, and I was more in the administration and sales sector.
Tell me more about your sister, what it was like to be a woman student in that area.
You didn't know my sister. She was a fairly strong character, if you know what I mean. It never fazed her one bit. She knew she was smarter than most of the boys in there. And she did very well as a student. I don't think she had any problems at all. It was unique to have a woman. We had one woman in my class. There was none in 34, but one woman in 35, and she got married when she was a sophomore. I don't remember her name, but she was a good student and she'd have done well. And she was Jewish.
You indicated that there was a school that they were trying to start on Long Island.
Right, in Farmingdale, Long Island. It was an agriculture school. The politicians in Brooklyn and Long Island and New York couldn't get Jewish students into the veterinary school. It was a depression. There was nothing. You would think it would be easy to get into college if you had $50. You went. If you didn't, you didn't.
And they took 5%, you said?
Prior to my class, it was limited to 5%. Mm-hmm. My sister's class had 2, I think, and the class before her 3 Jewish students. Mm-hmm. One of them was a fraternity brother of mine, Chet Lang. Some sort of deal was made, and instead of going to establishing a veterinary school, they all came to Cornell. And it was 17 students, almost all New Yorkers. There were 4 or 5 of us from New Jersey, but I was the only Jewish one. So they had this quota arrangement. It was very silent, you didn't talk about it, but everybody knew they took 2 one year and 3 the next.
And that was 5% of 50 students.
Yeah, but in my class, it was the first class that they took 17 Jewish students. And Dr. Sunderville, who was acting dean, he told us in the first week we were there that they didn't have enough room for 67 in the facilities, and that at the end of the year, the class would be reduced to 50. So that meant that 17 were going to go. But it so happened, none of the Jewish students flunked out or quit. There was a financial problem, too. You know, people couldn't afford to go there very long. My father gave me $1,000 a year. That was room, board, tuition, transportation, social life, books, and everything. Anyway, everybody passed, and we had some guys in our class that weren't too bright, but they got through all right. Mm-hmm. And several of them became like meat inspectors and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, in those days, getting an education was an unheard of thing to go to college. People were poor. I tell you, my father gave me $1,000 a year for everything.
When did the financial crunch of the Depression really hit? When did it start really having an effect on students at Cornell?
I think it did in one time I started.
About 31.
Yeah. At 31, people your age and younger can't understand what it was like. Gasoline was 13 cents a gallon. A dozen eggs was 12 cents. Everything was less costly. To go to Ithaca, you either went on the train or you hitchhiked. The first time my father sent me on the train. After that, I learned the ropes. I found out who had a car, like, was able to get rides. It's a strange world.
Your sister was at Cornell when Vranus Moore and Pierre Fish died. They died before you got there.
Yeah. I think my father knew Fish. My sister was admitted in 29, and I think it was Fish that my father talked to. I was admitted in the spring or summer of 31. Sunderville was the acting dean. And my father-in-law was gone. He had a medical degree by then.
Tell me about your father-in-law.
He's Samuel Goldberg. He graduated in 1917 from Cornell Med School. He got a master's degree in science and a PhD at Cornell. About 1923, he moved to New York and started to go to NYU Medical School.
Why did he leave Cornell?
Well, shall I be very frank with you?
Yeah.
Because they told him no Jew was ever going to be a tenured professor at Cornell. He figured there's no future for him. So he went to a medical school, and he taught pathology to the students of his own class.
Yeah.
He graduated medical school and immediately went to work at the North Presbyterian Hospital in 1928. And there was an opening. They didn't have a laboratory. They needed to open a big laboratory, and he did it for them. And he was a good pathologist, and I used to go visit him. He used to take me on postmortems. You know, he did postmortems for the city of Newark and the accident cases and all that kind of stuff. He was there until he died. He was died at age 85. Mm. He didn't practice much in the last 4 or 5 years, but he really was a good pathologist.
Did you feel, if you don't mind me asking, did you feel as a Jewish student at that time when you were going through that you were, you know, how were you treated by the non-Jewish students?
No, very well. I had no problem. We had no problem.
No problem.
The students had no problem. I think that the problem was in the old faculty, the older people. But the students, we had good students, and there were good ones that were Jewish and non-Jewish. I never had any kind of trouble with them. So my best friends were not Jewish. Mm-hmm. And Dick Hager and a few others. And I'd say we, as a group, we got along pretty well. And the question was, could you pay next week's food bill? If you know what I mean, it was, everybody was worried and had to have a second job or something. Mm-hmm. And it was hard, you know. Veterinary school required a lot of homework and reading and memorizing, so.
Was there any question that you would go back to work with your dad? You always wanted to work with your father in the vaccine business, is
oh,
that
man,
right?
No, I had no problem with that.
But that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have to explain to you. When I was in high school, I got a job with the state of New Jersey. I worked on a New Jersey egg laying contest where they had 100 individual houses, small houses, and each one had 12 or 13 pullets and one rooster. And they were breeding tests. And you used to have to be track listed 5 days, 5 times a day, and recorded if they laid eggs and how much the eggs laid. I worked there for 2 or 3 summers. I started as a sophomore in high school. I never forget when I got the first check, $60. It was for a month's work. And I took it to the bank. I was 13 or 14 years old. I was big. But the teller in the bank asked me where I got the check. I told him I worked for it. So he said, oh, let me check it. He went in the back room. He called my father. He said, your son's in here with a $60 state check. Where did he get it? And from then on, I had no problems. But I worked for 3 years taking care of poultry. And I was good at it. I could handle, guys would go on vacation, I would handle 2 sections. There were 3 of us, so there was no problem to me. And I knew the husbandry of poultry raising. And I was interested in it. My father was a good veterinarian by breeding horses. My father could castrate young colts on a standing position.
I never thought of your father as doing general practice. So.
He had an advantage. He moved to Vineland, the rural area. He had a car. So he not only could drive out to the farmers, they called him, he would go out, but he took physicians. Dr. Cunningham, he used to drive him to treat humans, you know, about to help them out. They were friends. At any rate, my father did primarily cattle work. Dairy cattle and occasional horses because there were no tractors. He started with a small animal practice about 1928 or so, and there was a need for it. And he opened a place and he did in the evenings. But there was never a question of small animals with me. It was poultry all the way from the beginning.
So tell me how he would castrate a horse.
He'd castrate a horse in a standing position, colts. And I said to him, how do you do it? And he said to me, all you have to do is be quick. He would
did
put a nose.
Twitch.
Twitch on him and have someone hold it tight. He would stand alongside of him and grab the testicles and two quick slices and two quick pulls, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I never forget, he sent me once to a hog raiser, and I'm thinking, used to feed garbage-fed hogs. This is in the middle of the war, and this guy wanted pigs castrated. He said I could vaccinate them too for hog cholera. So I went out there and I had everything I needed. I must have vaccinated 200 hogs and castrated about 100 small pigs, mm-hmm. male pigs. Those were the early days, you know, where he did anything. My father worked in Philadelphia and he lived here. He worked at Bybury. He was in charge of the horses at a hospital for mentally disordered.
What were the small animal diseases and operations that your dad would have done?
He did spay operations on female dogs. He did lancing abscesses and things like that. He got a lot of fractures, you know, accidents. Automobiles were becoming popular and dogs used to chase after. Mm-hmm. My father was not a good small animal practitioner. He hated it. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't like it. Mm-hmm. He liked large animal. And then when I got there, then we really got into the poultry aspect.
You told me once that there were other members of the family who came into the practice.
I had two cousins that were veterinarians.
Kansas, was it?
No, one from Penn, Leonard Mursky, he was about the class of 37 or 38. And Theodore Graham, he was in Auburn. We had a small animal place when my brother-in-law came to Byron that he ran, and we turned it over to my cousin.
So that's six people then. You, your sister, your brother-in-law, two cousins, and your father.
Right. And my first wife's brother was a veterinarian, Edwin Gilbert. He was in New Jersey. He was with the health department.
And was he a Cornell graduate?
Yeah. He went to Tennessee first, and then he went to Cornell.
Do you remember people like Dr. Udall?
Yeah. Materia Medica. He taught me a lesson one day. I asked him a question. Do I have to memorize the doses of drugs for goats and sheep and so forth? And he says, it's very simple. I'll give you a tip. I said, what's that? He said, it goes by weight. The bigger the animal, the bigger the dose. So he said, if you can figure out what's needed, you can proportion it down or up either way. Yeah, well, he was good. I liked him. Of course, in those days, we dispensed drugs to small animals and even large animals. The first case I had, I never forget it. I got married and I came back to Vineland. I had a car, a Ford, a two-door coupe, cost $603, new. And a California called up and a cow had a retained afterbirth. I went out and I looked at the cow and their afterbirth was hanging. And I said to myself, I told him, I'm going to give the cow an injection, and if that doesn't pass it, I'll come back in about 6 hours. And I gave pituitary. And I said to him, you call me by 2 o'clock, let me know what happens. This was in the morning. So at 2 o'clock, before 2 o'clock, about 12 o'clock, he called me, and he told me the cow had passed the afterbirth and everything was fine. And my father said to me, I saw my father on my great success, my first case, and he said to me, how much did you charge him? I said, I think I charged him $3. He said, where does he live? I told him. He said, that's 12 miles from here. I said, yeah, I had to drive there. So he said, you drove 12 miles and 12 miles back. That's 24 miles. And he said, did you use how much pituitary? I said, either 2cc, I think it was. He said, that's about $5 worth of pituitary. And how much did you charge him? I said, $3. He said, well, he only lost $4 or $5. So that taught me the first lesson that, that there was more in veterinary medicine than treating the animal. That was funny. But he was good-natured about it. In the beginning, I did some large animal work. We'd get calls, and I'd go out. And I was good with deliveries in cows because I'm big, physically big. And I could, my father was short, and it was hard for him with some of these dairy cows. Mm-hmm. So I had no problem with that, but I didn't do much of it. I did some. But I did on-call poultry work where chickens were sick, they would call us, and I would go look at them and diagnose the problem. And it worked out pretty good.
Dr. Lasher, do you know him very well?
Yeah, I know Hiram. Yeah, he came down. When he graduated college, he came to our place. He spent about a week with us.
He graduated in 42
or 43,
yeah,
right in the middle of the war.
Yeah.
We showed him around. We had nothing to hide. Mm-hmm. And then he went down to Delaware, mm-hmm. and he went into, ultimately into business, and was quite a success. Mm-hmm. He and I are very friendly. He sends me emails, and he sends me news items from the World Veterinary Poultry.
You still communicate?
Yeah, I hear from him a couple times a week. Going to college in the 1930s was a little different than it is today. Today, everybody goes to college. And when I went to college, in my high school class, there were 120 people. There may have been 4 people who went to college, 4 or 5. I remember I had a classmate. He worked at a fruit market, and he was making $14 a week for a 60-hour week. And I came home from Cornell one day, in my sophomore or junior year, and I met him. And I said, how you doing? And he said, terrific. He said, I got raised to $17 a week, and now I can get married. And, you know, people today, they think that they don't believe you. But it's the way it was. It was, when I started with my father, I got paid $25 a week. I had to rent a home, $37 a month. And I had children a year after I got married. Ultimately, as my business began to build up, then I began to make more money. But in the beginning, we kept a budget book of every cent we spent. I didn't smoke, so we didn't have that expense. And later I smoked, and I smoked too damn much, but I smoked for 50 years, and then 25 years I didn't smoke. I still had pneumothorax last fall, had a collapse of the left lung. Now I have the aftermath in the form of a respiratory problem that's attributable to both old age and lung damage. My sister had emphysema, my mother had emphysema, and I have it, I think, the beginning of it. So.
When did your sister pass on?
My sister died when she was 86, and she was 3 years older than me. So she would have been, now she would have been 96, and she died just 10 years ago.
How about her husband's, that's Vernikoff's, did he have a family as well?
Yes, he had sisters. I only knew one sister. They were in New York. I didn't know the whole family. I never knew his father. His father lived in Providence, but I had spoken to him on the phone. He was a good small animal practitioner. Mm-hmm. We converted him into the poultry, into the book. He handled the production. Mm-hmm. I have a picture I just sent to me by a friend of myself, my father, my brother-in-law, and another man. And my brother-in-law has a tray of eggs that he was inoculating or harvesting, I don't remember which it was, and it said, the 1 millionth egg. And this was way back, you know, it was in advertising. You got all you need?
I think so. That was terrific.